Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of America's Conservative Podcast. I am your host, Ed Denzel. Beautiful day here. Have you seen the new trailer for the Spider-Man movie that's coming out? I don't even know what the release date is. I'm going to guess it's within the next 2 months. Is it coming out in April or May? I don't think it's in June or July, but they issued this new trailer. It looks really good. The last couple Spider-Man movies have not been very good. I saw one of them. But the ones with Tobey Maguire I thought were pretty good, given the technology that was able to be used at the time for the special effects and everything else. And I thought they were pretty good. But then, you know, the expectations, I think, for fans now of superhero movies and comic books has been raised mainly because of the other Marvel movies. Probably the first Iron Man movie is probably what raised the level greatly. And that was brought on by a variety of factors. The technology, I think the computer CGI technology caught up to what the filmmakers wanted to do. You got a major actor in Robert Downey Jr. involved. And then, of course, Iron Man is one of the most iconic comic book characters of all time. It all came together. And so since then, the expectations are a lot higher. And I don't know if those Spider-Man movies from the early 2000s, although they were good, I don't know if they came out today, whether they would be considered as good. And they made a lot of money and everything else. And so now that they're doing, I guess, a reboot on Spider-Man for a third time, this movie has to be, because they already had that, once again, those two movies in between, the Tobey Maguire ones and the one that's going to be coming out. The movie has to be so much better than the original Spider-Man movie, where he was fighting against the Green Goblin, which, like I said, is still a movie I think that is pretty good. But it just because of the game has been raised in the last 15 years. But this trailer looks pretty good. Has Michael Keaton involved. I like the comedy. Of course, we've already seen the actor playing, I forget his name now, but the actor playing Spider-Man, he was already in Civil War. Had a small part in that, or may I say it, a very memorable role. I think he was only in that movie for about 10 minutes and had a very memorable part in it and really set it up nicely for his own movie by himself. But hearing about what the plot's going to be for this Spider-Man movie looks very good. Iron Man, Tony Stark is in this movie. So I'll be very interested to see it. I'm actually excited to see it, even though I'm 46 years old and I'm not a comic book fan at all. Just have never got into them at all. Not as a kid, not as a teenager, not as 20-something. And I worked with many people at Star Trek The Experience when I worked there who were into comic books. Just never got into them at all. But I really like the comic book movies. Never read Lord of the Rings either, but I like those movies kind of too. It's just how these things work out. So I'm looking forward to it. And then a new trailer came out today, and maybe you should check it out. Let's get to the show. Did you see 60 Minutes? I did not see 60 Minutes. For the record, I did not see 60 Minutes on Sunday night. I cannot remember the last time I actually sat down to watch 60 Minutes. It had to have been, it's been a long time. It's, in fact, I don't know if it's ever happened since I left Pennsylvania. I just don't remember that show being on my watch list. And you should know something. And it shows, I guess, just how much TV has changed. There was a time, I mean, this is a mind boggler. This will blow your mind if you don't know this. 60 Minutes used to be the most watched TV show on TV. All the time, every week. Every week in the 70s and 80s. Hugely, hugely popular show. And now we see it's, I don't even know what its ratings are now, but I know it's not near the top. just shows you how people's viewing choices. And I think part of the reason is because we now have so much news. We have 24/7 news. And that has hurt a show like 60 Minutes. And I'm not sure, in addition, that 60 Minutes reaches the high journalistic standards that they allegedly had 40 years ago. And we, of course, as conservatives, we look back at 60 Minutes now, and even though it was popular and everything, we say, well, it sure was biased. Maybe something that wasn't as obvious at the time, but it sure, you know, you could say in some ways that 60 Minutes was the precursor to what we now consider to be liberal bias in media today. Although I wouldn't say that it started with 60 Minutes. But on TV and news, you could say with Mike Wallace and the rest of those guys, you could say it started there, but still very, very popular. But on Sunday night, two nights ago, they did a story that is a mind blower. This is worrisome. They did a story about the terrorist attack in Garland, Texas. And I have to admit, and this is my apology, I want to issue an apology, that when I talk about all these terrorist incidents that have happened in the United States, I talk about the Boston bombing, I talk about Orlando, I talk about San Bernardino, but I haven't mentioned the Garland, Texas attack recently. Those two guys who traveled, I guess, from Arizona to Garland, Texas. There was a Muhammad drawing contest. Remember this? Remember that? Get together, that conference. These guys showed up. And probably the reason that it's been a lot out of a lot of people's minds is because no innocent people got killed. No policemen got killed. There was a couple guys that got injured, but nobody died. No innocent people died. The only people that died were the terrorists. These two guys who showed up there. And they were there because they were not happy about this contest. And this goes back to the Charlie Hebdo incident in France before that. Well, you now find out on 60 Minutes there's a lot more to this story than we all realized. And it is disgusting. I think that it was well known right after this attack happened that these guys were on the FBI's radar. These were guys who had been said things online, had said things on Twitter, had been communicating with ISIS elements, and the FBI was keeping an eye on them. And that happens sometimes, and sometimes it doesn't. And you know, we wonder as regular citizens, as civilians, do these people slip through the cracks? Or, you know, in all these incidents, it seems these terrorists were on somebody's radar, and most of these terrorists that have attacked that San Bernardino elsewhere have been American citizens, or were here, at least here legally. And it comes out, well, they were on this, the FBI had them on the list, and you just wonder why they don't act on these things. Maybe the Orlando incident, terrorist attack, would be a good representation of that. Well, in this case, it went far deeper than that. And just when you don't think the story can get any worse, it gets worse. So the FBI had an undercover agent who was communicating with these guys. And within the communication, you could say that the FBI agent, undercover agent, was trying to incite them. You could say that. You really could say that he wasn't trying to incite them to do something. Let's put it this way. Granted, he's undercover. He's pretending to be a terrorist himself. But I would not say that in any way did this undercover agent try to convince these guys not to do it. And even pretending to be who he was, saying this might not be the best target because of this or because of that. Maybe the undercover agent felt that might tip him off that he wasn't who he says he was. And I don't know if he ever met these guys in person. I don't think he had. I think this was just all over the internet. Emails, Facebook, I don't know, a variety of communication ways, probably. I don't know if they talked on the phone or not. But at one point, this undercover agent says something like, "Tear up Texas," to these guys. That sounds to me like entrapment. I just got to be honest with you. Do I think that these guys would have done this attack anyway? Yes. But if I was a defense attorney and these guys were still alive, I think that defense would be decent. I don't know if it would fly. I don't know if a jury would go along with that. But what really, you have to think of this. Does that need to be said, even as an undercover agent? Does that really, really need to be said? I don't think so. And the defense attorneys, see, because what happened was these two guys got killed. Then the FBI, police, they started getting involved. And as is usually the case, a bunch of friends of these guys that were arrested as well. And one of the attorney for one of these other friends, another guy who was a terrorist, just hadn't done anything yet, was on 60 Minutes. Who was it? Anderson Cooper was talking to him. And so that's where this information was coming from. But I think it's very relevant. But I think that if I was the attorney for one of those guys, had they lived, that tear up Texas comment would certainly stand out. And all this information is now out there. The defense attorneys for these other guys who were associates of these two terrorists who got killed have gotten their hands on all of these documents because the government had to release them. And that was that tear up Texas comment. These conversations were recorded. That was in there. Should also be known that the FBI was paying an undercover, it wasn't an undercover agent technically, but was paying a guy to be an informant to one of these terrorists who ended up getting killed. The guy was getting $132,000. That's a nice gig if you can get it. In any case, so that's bad enough, saying that to tear up Texas, I think. Well, then these defense attorneys of these other guys who are still alive have found out the additional information. That this undercover agent went to Garland, Texas, did not live there, was from another state, went to Garland, Texas the exact same day that the attack happened. Very strange. Sounds very, very strange to me. Just happened to be there. Not only did he happen to be there, maybe you remember, there was a photo that was taken right before the shooting started, and it was a security guard and a police officer standing there, and the terrorist car is right beside him. I mean, this picture was taken moments before the shooting started, less than 30 seconds before the shooting started. You know who took that picture? You aren't going to believe this. This is amazing. The FBI undercover agent took that picture. Moreover, it turns out that he followed those terrorists to the event. He was in a car right behind them. Now, if it doesn't get any, at this point you're saying, what in the heck was going on? And of course, the whole time I'm saying this, I'm thinking, and you want government to take care of your health care. That goes through my mind every time I hear stories like this, whether it has to do with terrorism or not. But on top of that, if it can't get any worse, here he is behind the terrorists who have talked about shooting up this event, and he's simply following. Doesn't call, allegedly a few days before that, the FBI had issued a statement to Garland, Texas, hey, watch out. But here an FBI agent is right behind this car, never calls anybody, never lets the police know, nothing. And he knows that these two guys are headed toward this location. If that's not bad enough, once the shooting started, the FBI agent fled, left the scene. And in fact, what you find out is that he was fleeing the scene so fast, he got pulled over by the cops and got handcuffed. And there was a local news report that videotaped him on, you know, being leaned over the trunk of a police car, being handcuffed. That's the undercover FBI agent. And I am sure if you go on YouTube somewhere, you're going to find his face. Because in the FBI, in the 60 Minutes report that I watched on YouTube, his face was blurred out. I am sure that his face is on a video somewhere on the internet. And he's supposed to be undercover. So not only did he incite it, saying, tear up Texas, and then came to Texas and followed these guys to the event. When the shooting started, he became a coward and tried to get away. What was he going... I want to know something. What was he going to say? What was he going to tell his superiors about this? Because they had to have known that he was communicating with them. That's how you get... You know, these guys have to file reports and everything. Was this FBI agent going to be truthful in saying that he was there when the shooting started? I doubt it. And in fact, as I talk about this, I start wondering, how many other times has this happened? How can we not be sure that there weren't FBI agents following the guy who ended up shooting up the nightclub in Orlando? How do we know that there weren't FBI agents who were following those guys in Boston when they blew up the marathon? How do we know there weren't FBI agents who were following the husband and wife team in San Bernardino that day when they finally shot, you know, they shot all that guy's coworkers? How do we know that now? Here we have an incident where it just happened to have the FBI undercover agent got caught. See, this is stuff that's, to me, this is scary. I have an inclination what was going on. I mean, I think that I can explain this, but it still is distressing. Probably what went on is that this undercover agent kind of gung-ho. That's why he says tear up Texas. And then starts having second thoughts about it and finds out that these guys are headed to Garland, Texas. And he thinks, well, you know, I better go there and make sure, you know, that, you know, I want to make sure that they're saying what they're, you know, are they telling me the truth or not? Are they really going to do this or aren't they going to do this? And then once he's following them, the nerves start taking. He wants to be a hero. He wants to be all gung-ho. But then on that day of the shooting, he starts having second thoughts. Well, I got these terrorists in front of me. I'm not supposed to be here. Probably at some point he figured out, you know what? What the heck am I doing here? But now, see, he himself, he's gotten himself caught in a little bit of a pickle. Because if he calls law enforcement, eventually his superiors are going to be like, why did you let them get to there in the first place? Huh? What were you doing there? In addition, he can't stop the car himself because he's afraid he's going to get killed. And he can't call the local cops because then they're going to be wondering, why are we just finding out about this now? And you're behind them in a car. And they're a block away from the conference center. You think you could have maybe let us know maybe an hour in advance? And then when the shooting starts, he realizes he's in way, way, way over his head. He tries to flee, thinking, I can get away from here. I can go back to where I live, and nobody will even know that I was here. And I'll falsify a police report, and that'll be that, and it'll just be a terrorist incident, and I'll turn in all my records, and I'll just be like, well, and it'll come out to the public that, well, the FBI was tracking these guys, and that'll be the story. Well, yeah, they were tracking them all right, to the point there was an FBI agent right behind them. within 100 yards of where the shooting started, and the guy fled. This reminds me of, you know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of the whole Jared Zimmers and Trayvon Martin thing, where a guy in George Zimmerman is going way, way beyond what he should have done. If he thought Trayvon Martin was a suspicious character, he should have called the cops and got the heck out. But he wanted to be a cop. He wanted to be a hero. He wanted to be this. He wanted to be that. And in the end, it blew up in his face when Trayvon Martin fought back. And you can say whatever you want about Trayvon Martin and everything else. Maybe he did deserve it. George Zimmerman doing whatever he was doing. Neighborhood watch. He should have called the cops and left it at that. But no, he wanted to stalk Trayvon Martin. He had a gun in his car. Wanted to be Mr. Tough Guy. And then he found out he wasn't so tough. And he's the one that almost got killed. And he had to shoot Trayvon Martin. And Trayvon Martin did not deserve to be murdered. Did not deserve to be shot. You know, two idiots coming together in Sanford, Florida at that time. This FBI thing reminds me of that. Some guy who wants to be a hero, getting all excited. Yeah, tear up Texas, dude. And then in the end, he's just some coward. He wants to be a hero, but at the time, he can't do the right things. And being a hero, if you want to do that, is about making the right choices. It's not about shooting weapons. It's not about acting tough. Good heroes make good choices. This guy did not. And I don't know, 60 Minutes tried to talk to him, tried to talk to the FBI about this, and they issued a statement. They had said they had no prior knowledge of the plot to attack for the attack in Garland, Texas, which is a lie. That is an, you know how I know it's a lie? I know it's a lie because one of their FBI agents was within 100 yards following these guys when this attack happened. That's how I know it's a lie. And you would hope that, you know, I know that there are so many topics in the United States that divide us, left and right, rich and poor, white and black, and Muslim and Christian and atheist and everything else. This is a topic that should unify all ideologies in the United States. This idea of bad police work. To the point, not just from local police, but to the FBI. And a desire to find out what truly is going on behind the scenes. And maybe this is a kind of story maybe that, I mean, it's a crazy story. You wouldn't even believe it. If I'd have told you 5 years ago that there was going to be a terrorist attack, and there was an FBI agent within 100 yards of when it happened, had been following the terrorists, and when the shooting started, he drove off. Tried to get away, you would say that would never happen. Well, it happened. It happened. And what I was going to say is I probably am a little more sensitive to this, even though, once again, it's a horrible story, because of everything I hear with my other program, Unfound. And I hear from family members about how the police just drop the ball all over the place on all of these cases that I cover. Virtually all of them. Virtually. And don't do good police work and don't care and everything else. And so when I hear this story, as amazed I am, when I read this, and I think I first found out about this through redstate.com. And then I went and found the video, the actual part of 60 Minutes where this was covered. I was amazed, and then more I think about it, and I'm like, well, you know what? This is just a continuation of what I hear on my other show. It doesn't seem like the police in too many, I mean, these stories that I cover are all over the United States. You hear the same stories over and over and over. And so if they're happening all over the United States, then I have to believe that the FBI, it's going on there too. Just a lot of laziness on one hand, or people who are too gung-ho the other way in that they just want to, they allegedly want to catch a terrorist, but if a terrorist actually was right in front of them, they'd run the other way. I guess to use a liberal term, I guess that would be known as a chicken hawk. And I wonder if this is going on more than we ever could believe, we could ever understand as American citizens who are not involved in law enforcement in any way. So they had one or two defense attorneys on, and they had like a reporter on there as well. No, they had one defense attorney, they had a policeman on there, and then I think this was a reporter from the Garland, Texas area on there. Anderson Cooper talked to all of them. And the attorney was completely, you know, just could not believe it. He could not believe that this happened, first of all. Second of all, he couldn't believe that the government was so willing to hand this information over because it makes them look so bad. It's all, I think he felt like it was almost like a mistake. So it either was a mistake, or the people handing over just didn't think it was any big deal that their FBI agent would be so close to a terrorist attack and then flee. I think another thing that has helped the FBI, and this is stated in that segment, what happens? Now, granted, no innocent Americans got killed. What would happen if this was like San Bernardino? 20 people get killed. What happens if how many people were killed in Orlando all shot? And that FBI agent would have still been caught at the scene. I think the reason that the FBI has gotten away with it to this point is because nobody at the conference was killed. I think that's the reason. If this would have become a big, you know, there are a lot of high body count, I think this would have been a much bigger deal. Now, you should also, so that's been in the FBI's favor as far as the public knowledge of this. Now, you should know James Comey, and he's been in the news a lot the last 6 months, probably more than the FBI director really should be. Really, I guess we could talk about Louis Freeh and other FBI directors who spent a lot of time up on Capitol Hill and making the news. And we could go back to the J. Edgar Hoover days. Probably the most well-known director of the FBI. But Louis Freeh, I told you before that the FBI didn't, you know, said they had no prior knowledge of this attack. Well, James Comey himself has said that. His story is totally opposed what the information is that the defense attorneys have, that the government gave them, totally is in opposition to what the defense attorney said in his statements to Anderson Cooper. And I remind you again, this is an attorney that was not one for one of the guys that died, but for one of the guys who was an associate of these guys who is now in jail. So is this going to go anywhere? You would hope that it would, once again, because I think that this is something that people on the right and on the left, a story that they can look at and say something is wrong here. Something is wrong. And I know that we on the right, they on the left, would come at it from different angles. But I think on both sides, we have to be very worried about an FBI that is so good at tracking terrorists to the point that they are behind them on the way to an attack, and the FBI does not do anything to stop them. I mean, even if the guy just thought that they were going to just drive by, they should have been stopped. And I still believe the reason he didn't call it in is not because he thought that, but because at some point he figured out, I'm not supposed to be here. I'm not supposed to be here. But I think the left and right can both be bothered by this. And we know that the left hates the police anyway, but we on the right, we're concerned about having a good police force in the United States, both at the federal level and at the local level, state level. And this is the opposite of that. Hopefully we can unify to get to the bottom of this. I got to go to the break. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.
The voice of American conservatism, WRS Digital, Red State Talk Radio.
And we are back at America's Conservative Podcast. One more thing about this FBI story. This comes on the heels. Now, remember, this all happened during Barack Obama's watch. This all happened while Eric Holder was still the main person. He was the Attorney General, head of the Department of Justice. And so the FBI was under his leadership. I think that I'm getting the timeline right. This is on the heels of what else? Fast and Furious, for example. And it really makes you wonder what the heck is going on. And to me, I think, and I'm not going to be a partisan on this, I'm guessing that this is something that's been going on for a long time. I think that the only way that, for example, Fast and Furious happens, the only way that this particular incident happens with the FBI is because there is a mentality inside the FBI that this is the way you do things. And I think that goes deeper than whoever is the administration in charge. Because those people who are in the FBI, they don't change from administration to administration. The agents are career agents. They're going to be in their 30 years probably no matter who the president is. So I'm thinking that there is already a mentality within the FBI that this kind of stuff is okay. I bring up Fast and Furious as I like to remind all of you. Yes, it's horrible. Eric Holder is a horrible person. Barack Obama is a horrible person. Here's what I also know. A bunch of regular FBI ATF agents went along with it. When this came to the planning board in the FBI, in the deep bowels and super secret places that they were going to do this, it's obvious to me that not enough of them spoke up. You know how I know? Because Fast and Furious happened. And no one, when they found out that this was going to happen, sent a letter to any news organization, you know, wrote the letter with gloves on so there's no fingerprints, there's no DNA, nothing like that. And said, this is what's going on, you need to look into this. Nobody did that. It took people getting killed with those guns for that to all happen. For it to finally get out. And this is maybe one of those ways that I maybe disagree with my fellow conservatives. This is why in a few little ways, I don't give Julian Assange a break, but I give a little Edward Snowden a little bit 1% of a break, because I do want whistleblowers in my federal government if they are going to see things like Fast and Furious, even though they are sworn to secrecy, that they should talk about. That's my belief. It's my belief on that. And I know that is contrary to the way other people think, both on the left and the right. So something like this, this is a little bit different because I'm not sure how many people were really involved in the tracking of these two terrorists who went to Garland, Texas. But I would hope in a situation like this, if somebody else found out that this agent was behaving like this, or some other agent knew that this guy was traveling to Garland, Texas on his own to do whatever, I think that I would have said something to somebody. Maybe I might be flipping burgers at McDonald's the next week, but I know that I would have said something and said, there's something weird here. This is wrong. This is weird. It's wrong. These guys shouldn't be allowed to get anywhere near Garland, Texas at all. Pull them over for a broken taillight. So there's something, don't know what it is. I don't know how it starts. Maybe it's kind of like the VA. There is just an aura of incompetence that goes along with a lot of this. And the more you hear a story like this, then you hear all these stories about all these terrorists were on the FBI's radar, but they didn't do anything about them. There's something, and this goes deeper than politics and who's in the White House and who's in Congress. It's more than that. And because of that, it's probably a harder problem to solve. So we'll see what happens. We'll see if Donald Trump and his administration or anybody wants to really, really look into this and see. Let's move on to something else. Another amazing story. Luckily, there was no violence involved in this, at least to my knowledge. There's a lawyer who stole over $500 million. That's a five with eight zeros. A lawyer who stole over $500 million from Social Security from 2004 to 2016. And I'm going to guess, I don't know exactly, I read this article at cdn.govexec.com. I don't know how the guy eventually got caught. It wasn't just him, it was a combination of him with, I think, an insurance company and some doctors filling out these false forms and getting these payments for stuff that never happened. In fact, in reading the article, I forget where I first saw it, but the person commenting on it said that if anybody watched the first couple years of The Sopranos, this was something that The Sopranos were doing, ripping off Social Security or one of these government agencies for money, using doctors and lawyers and false claims and all those things. Well, this guy ended up being able to do this for 12 years, and once again, I don't know how he eventually got caught. But over $500 million. And see, this is one, once again, this is one of the perils of big government. This is one of the problems with big government. And when I talk about this, I think about who was it? John Dillinger, whoever it was, when he was asked, well, why do you rob banks? And what did he say? Well, that's where the money is. Best, maybe one of the best answers in the history of in criminal history. In the history of crime, that may be the best answer ever. Spectacular. And I don't know if it was John Dillinger. It might have been somebody else. But the reason that the lawyer and these guys could do it is because, once again, that's where the money is in Social Security. And it should be known, I bet there are scams, a huge scam is going on, at least a few of these scams is going on like this right now in the United States. This guy just happened to get caught. I'm sure that there are other scams like this going on right now. And why? Because that's where the money is. This is one of the other perils of big government. When big government has a $4 trillion, $5 trillion budget, there are going to be people that look at the federal government as a bank, and it not just the poor people. Not just the poor people. Not just the poor people who want to rip off, file false claim and get $50 more of welfare checks per month or something like this. There's going to be this is kind of like blue-collar crime. This, what we're talking about, is white-collar crime, and it gets into the millions, tens of millions, and now hundreds of millions. Why? Because that's where the money is. You can't steal $500 million from Social Security if Social Security doesn't have that money in it. In fact, you can't steal from Social Security if Social Security doesn't exist at all. And you can't steal that amount of money from the federal government if the budget is a lot smaller. Once again, one of the perils of big government. At some point, some people are going to figure out, you know what, I can steal from the government and probably get away with it for quite a long time. And maybe if I behave myself, I never get caught. Maybe these guys just got greedy. I don't know. So it's not just, and that's the, and the way I look at that, it's just the way people are. We are flawed human beings. And we have a hard time denying our desire, our wants, our needs. And our self-control only goes so far. There's a reason that so many men cheat on their wives. There's a reason so many women cheat on men, women cheat on their men, and it happens in gay relationships too. And as the old saying goes, nobody gets married thinking they're going to cheat on their spouse. But it ends up happening anyway. Nobody gets married thinking they're going to get divorced, but it happens anyway. Why? Because we are flawed humans. We say the wrong things. We do the wrong things. And if you want to get government fraud reduced, the only way to do that is take the money out of government. Yes, you're always going to need a certain amount of money to run a government. I'm not an anarchist. You know I believe in the federal government. You know I believe in the Constitution and the way it's written and how the states should get along with each other. And the federal government's just supposed to oversee all of it. That's all the federal government's supposed to do. It's just supposed to oversee how all the 50 states get along. So that's the way I view it. But when you get to a $4 trillion budget, then you can have people ripping off hundreds of millions of dollars over the course of 12 years. And there's another problem to this. I'm going to guess, I mean, if we have a FBI agent who is following two terrorists to an attack, I'm going to guess that there were people in the Social Security Administration who knew this fraud was going on. Not that they were taking part in it, not that they got a dollar from it or anything, but they knew it was going on and they really didn't care. They probably saw these, bills coming in. They saw the paperwork coming in, all from these guys. Maybe think and probably comparing all of the submissions from this fraudulent group to all these people who are probably playing by the rules and seeing that there's something about this paperwork that seems a little odd. Man, they do file a lot of claims and they are real expensive and everything compared to everything over here. And none of these people did anything. Why? Because they just don't give a dang. They're just a bunch of government workers putting in their time. It's not their money. And they know what the federal budget is. It's in the trillions. Hey, couple bucks here, couple bucks there, no big deal. Whereas I would like to think that if it was a private company where people's paychecks and their jobs depended on them keeping within a budget and having forensic accounting to find out what's going on and checking out their customers and everything else, that this scam for $500 million wouldn't have been able to go on for 12 years. I want to know, was General Motors ever ripped off for $500 million over the course of 12 years? Was Ford Motor Company, has Apple, has Microsoft, has Dell, has any of these companies, has Walmart, anybody? I mean, I understand maybe in Walmart's case, they get a lot of shoplifting. People are really crafty like that. But, a concerted effort, the filing of paperwork. If you were filing paperwork, let's put it this way regarding Walmart. If there was somebody out there, a group of individuals, whether it's lawyers, doctors, accountants, engineers, whoever else, filing, doing something where they're ripping off Walmart trying to get to that goal of $500 million over 12 years, do you think they'd be successful? I don't. And no matter how big Walmart is, it certainly isn't as big as the Social Security Administration. Or its budget, it surely doesn't come close to the size of the federal government's. Even though Walmart is the largest private employer in the world. they would figure out that something was going on and fix it. That this could continue is not because these guys were crafty. It was probably because the people that they were filing the paperwork to didn't give a dang. And once again, I go back to the FBI. If the FBI agent whose expectation, at least the public's expectation for behavior is probably quite higher than a person who works in the Social Security Administration. If an FBI agent is going to flee the scene of a terrorist attack, then I think it's pretty possible that multiple Social Security workers are going to let fraud continue because they just want to get to 5 o'clock every day. What do you think? I think so. See, when it comes to big government, and of course, when I think of it, I still think of the good old Breitbart days, not the bad new Breitbart days. The biggovernment.com, that's what I think of. But when I think of big government, for conservatives, it should be more than just the budget, even though this is kind of part of the budget. And it should be more than just about rights. It's what all of that combined can turn into. It's not just that the budget for the federal government is $4 trillion to $5 trillion. It's that big government allows crime to continue, the ripping off of government. It makes it more likely, if the bigger government gets, the more fraud is going to happen. Why? Going back to the start of this discussion, because that's where the money is. And the federal government, frankly, is an easy mark because it has a bunch of people who are working there who don't give a dang. Look at the Veterans Administration. Once again, as the public, we have a pretty high expectation for people who work in the VA. Why? Because they are supposed to take care of the people who put their bodies and their minds in the way of bullets and missiles and IEDs and everything else. And if they get hurt, we want them to have the best care that they can get, even though, and I know it's socialized medicine. But the reason that the VA fails on top of it being socialized medicine is obviously because they have a bunch of people who really aren't in the medicine business. They are in the increase their salary business. And once again, I think that this is a function of big government. These guys and women who did all of this and faked paperwork and everything, they could never have gotten away with this at a regular hospital. I'm not saying there aren't shady, you know, bad things that go on at hospitals. I'm not saying that there isn't fraud, but nothing compared to what went on in the VA and probably still goes on for the last 10, 15 years. Nothing close to it in the civilian hospital system in the United States. Now, is it that the VA just happens, its medical system just happens to bring in the worst of us? Is that just a coincidence, or is there something else going on? I think it's something else. And it's this all of this big government stuff, as I always, and I haven't said this for a few months, nobody, when they grow up and they're in college, going to school for medicine or whatever, it is going to admit that once they get into the VA, they want to rip it off. And they're willing to let veterans die. But nobody who's in college would ever say that. If you go get back in a time machine, nobody would say that. Travel in a time machine from 2017 back to 1995. And you find one of these people, they're in college, 20-year-old. And you say, you know what, 20-some years from now, you're going to be indicted. You're going to be charged with ripping off veterans. And you're going to allow veterans to die. You're going to falsify paperwork. And a bunch of men and women who put their lives on the line for you, you're going to rip them off. You're going to allow them to die. You know what the 21-year-old would say? That would never happen. But it happens. Same way with this FBI agent. When he was in college, you know, one day you're going to follow a couple terrorists to a terrorist attack, and then you're going to flee the scene as an FBI agent. You know what that guy would say? That'll never happen. Same way with the people who work in the Social Security Administration. You know, one of these days you're going to be getting all this paperwork from this lawyer and these doctors that you know are ripping Social Security off, but you're going to let it go. And you know what those college-age kids would have said? That'll never happen. But it happens. Now, could it be that big government brings out the worst in us? Not just in the people who work there, but the people who have to deal with it. And could it be if government was smaller, a lot of this would go away? That we would have less of a VA problem, that we would have less of a Social Security problem. Of course, you know my opinions on both of that. It's socialized medicine, and those are just entitlement transfer programs that kill young people in the United States. Social Security and all of this. If the FBI, if the federal government was smaller, if the FBI was a smaller but more efficient unit, do you think something like this would happen? Of course not. Of course not. Once more, it's a problem of big government. It taints everybody it touches. It taints them. It's just something about it. I don't know what it is. Never worked for the federal government. But there's something. And we as conservatives, we have to talk about that more. One more thing before I go. I still continue to believe that this appointment, you know, see, look, I've been able to get through this whole program with hardly ever talking about Donald Trump. I should get a gold star for that. But I continue to think that this nomination of Neil Gorsuch is never, ever going to make up for the other things that are going to go on in Donald Trump's presidency, whether it's 4 years or 8 years, under the banner of being a Republican. I saw this article in the New York Times. Yes, I know. If you want to believe it, that Trump had a conversation with Joe Manchin from West Virginia. And guess what the topic was? Gun control. And there are rumors out there that Trump may go along with some gun control to get some other things that he wants. How are you gun owners? I'm a gun owner. How do you feel about that? More gun control at the federal level. Is that what we need? In addition, Joe Manchin was also concerned about a Minors Protection Act guaranteeing health care and all of this stuff for all these minors. Yeah, like we need another social program, social welfare program. Trump liked the idea of that. He also talked about priming the pump, infrastructure, and also high-speed rail. Now, I'm going to ask you this. I'm very, very serious about that. If we start dumping all this trillions of dollars of money into infrastructure, high-speed rail, we get more gun control, we get another welfare program, on and on and on. Is that going to make up for one solitary Supreme Court justice? Because here's what I know. If it was flipped and we had a Republican Congress with Hillary Clinton as president, I don't know if her nominee for the Supreme Court even gets through. Probably would not be as conservative as it'd like. I don't know how bad it is. But here's what I know. There would be no infrastructure, no high-speed rail, no Minors Protection Act. Because the Republicans would oppose Hillary Clinton if she came up with those things. But because it's Donald Trump, they may go along with them. This is one Supreme Court justice is never going to make up for all this. And that was the mistake all of you made. I did not. But I got to go. You can find this show Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern on RedStateTalkRadio.com on the Prime Channel. Follow the show on Twitter, USA Podcast. Talked about my other program, Unfound, a missing persons program. You can find it at Podomatic and iTunes. And you can find that show on Twitter, and that is Unfound Podcast. I gotta go. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.